Good morning and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. We are here every Saturday and Sunday morning from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. I am your host for the next hour, Dr. Kevin Passero. My wonderful co-host, Dana Lake, will return next week with another exciting show. We are here every week bringing you a wide variety of information and topics related to health, wellness, nutrition, dietary advice, things about supplements, always trying to spice it up with controversy when we can, and including special guests every week. Have a wonderful show lined up for you today. Today we're going to be talking about herbal medicine, and we're going to really be getting into some of the specifics about herbs, how's the best way to take them, what are the advantages and disadvantages of using different forms of herbal extracts. We're going to talk about a big sort of controversial topic related to herb safety and how do you select a product that is safe, that is effective, that you know is not contaminated, so you can feel comfortable about the herbs that you take. There's a huge selection of things out on the market. Lots of companies are getting into using herbal medicine these days because they know how popular it is, but that doesn't mean that they're putting out a good product. So I have a really phenomenal special guest today who's going to be offering us some really great insight. He's an expert in the field of herbalism and has been involved with it for over 25 years and is going to really give us some good insight into what is going on in the herbal industry and how you can select some of the best herbal products out there. We're also going to be talking about some different herbal products that you may want to consider using just for everyday use. These are herbs that may benefit or support optimal health and are safe to be taken every single day. And research is basically showing us that these herbs have an amazing ability to support the optimal health and well-being of humans. So there are some really important considerations to think about. So hopefully at the end of the show today, you're going to know a lot more about herbal medicine than when we started. So I think it's a really exciting show. For me, it's definitely an exciting show because I absolutely love using herbs. Out of all of the things that I use as a naturopathic doctor, whether it be vitamins or homeopathy or dietary therapies and nutrition, using herbs is probably one of my favorite things. I think some of my experiences working with growing herbs and using herbs really brought me in line with these plants. When you think about a lot of the other things that we're using in that I use as a naturopathic doctor, like vitamins and supplements, a lot of the vitamins are very important and minerals are very important, but the herbs are this incredible living organism that has such a wisdom in and of itself. Us as humans have been evolving with herbs for thousands and thousands of years, and our bodies have developed very specific responses to these herbs, particularly on how our bodies respond to them as we use them medicinally and their ability to affect our health. You know, it's interesting to think about, I was actually having a discussion with some friends about it this weekend, how in the world humans over the years learned which herbs out of all the plants that grow, which ones we can actually utilize to affect certain aspects of our health. And when I was in school, we learned about something, and I think a lot of it was trial and error. A lot of it was wisdom, and some of it was just observing what happens in nature. You know, if you look at herbs, there is this thing called that we learned about in school called the doctrine of signatures, which is this ability to look at an herb in nature, and by looking at it, it gives us clues as to how we might utilize that to help our own health. So I'm going to give you a few examples, and I think these are interesting ones. For example, there's the herb mullein. Mullein is an herb that is very commonly used to help with lung-related issues. And if you look at a mullein leaf as it grows, you see it's covered in these super fine little hairs that look just like the cilia in our lungs. So it's actually giving us almost a clue as to what organ this herb might be helpful for. Milk thistle is a really popular one that just about everybody has heard of. And everybody knows that really it's very specific to supporting liver and detoxification. Well, if you look at the leaf of a milk thistle plant, you see all of these white striated lines that run through the leaf. And they oftentimes look very, very similar to what you would see is as far as the bile tracts in our liver is concerned. So they really mimic almost what our organ of the liver looks like at a microscopic level. And the milk thistle, it has this milky substance that runs through these white veins, just like the bile runs through those bile ducts in our liver. And then ginkgo is another really popular herb that a lot of people know about and have heard of. And especially most people know about its use for its supporting brain health. and memory. Well, ginkgo is a bilobed leaf, one of the few plants that are out there that has a bilobed leaf structure. And as we know, our brain is bilobed. So there's this doctrine of signatures, this way that you can look at the wisdom of herbs and what nature is telling us about how these herbs might be helpful to us. So without further ado, I really want to bring on my special guest because we have a lot to talk about today. And I think he's got a lot of wonderful information to share with us. As one of North America's most respected herbalists and botanical researchers, Richard Rick Scalzo has over 25 years of clinical and practical experience with herbal medicine. He is a leading authority on the cultivation of herbs, the extraction process, whole plant standardization, which we're going to talk about, and traditional herbal therapies. He regularly teaches herbal classes, interfaces with the media, and lectures nationally on herbal topics. In 1987, he founded Gaia Herbs, a nationally branded grower and manufacturer of herbal wellness solutions that reinforce the inherent connections between healthy bodies, communities, and ecosystems, where he currently serves as the president and CEO. Under his leadership and vision, the company has set industry standards for its organic commitment, sustainable methods, educational curriculum, and quality assurance program. So, Rick, thanks so much for being on the show today.
It's my pleasure, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And I know, you know, like me, you have a specific passion and love for herbs and herbalism. I was wondering if you could just share with our listeners your journey through becoming an herbalist and starting Gaia. And I mean, I've been to your farm in North Carolina, and it is just a beautiful specimen of a working farm growing all these medicinal herbs. You just maybe share a little bit of your passion and your love for herbs with my listeners.
Be happy to. My passion actually started, I would say, about 30 years ago when I was in college seeking some answers to my spiritual journey. And that journey led me to an understanding about plants and learning about plants. And I felt that if I was really going to find some answers to the questions I had about spirituality, they needed to come from nature. And herbs were just perfect because I began to, as you were so beautifully describing about the doctrine of signatures mm-hmm. there in your introduction, I began to observe that there were many, many relationships that exist between nature and the physiology. And in my studies, I learned that there, for over 400,000 years, the human gene has been co-evolving with the plant kingdom. And mm-hmm. I came to find out that we have a myriad, millions and millions of receptors in our body, and I came to find out that for every receptor in our body and mind, there is a complementary and corresponding substance in the body and mind of nature, and we can find that in the chemistries of plants. Mm-hmm. So there's this symbiosis, this synergy that we share with our environment, and there's been a process that of coevolution, and all of this is a real passion to me, the understanding, because for me it awakens every cell in my body to know that I share this relationship with my environment that is so intimate. And if there is some imbalance in the physiology, somewhere in the physiology at some point in the course of our life, there ought to be some part of the chemistries of nature found in plants to reset and reshape that imbalance to back to a state of balance and homeostasis.
Yeah, and I think a point that really drives this home that people forget, for example, in Oregon, you know, naturopathic physicians are allowed to prescribe medications. And the basis that determines which medications a naturopathic physician can prescribe is based on, did that substance come from the natural world? Is that medication based on something from the natural world? Now, we have over 500 different medications that we are legally allowed to write for based on the fact that a lot of the basis of those medications come from the natural world, specifically plants.
That's correct. And you know, there are endless amount of chemistries in plants, and just to know that there is a complementary relationship to our receptors in our body, you know, it just puts me at rest, because if there is that harmony between plants and people, then there ought to be at least the possibility of minimizing side effects and you know, harmful effects from using plants. And historically, we have seen that plants, although there is controversy, historically, if you look at adverse events, we find that plants are relatively high, very, very safe.
Yep, exactly. So this is what I want to get to when we come back from the break. I want to talk to you, Rick. I know you are an expert in this aspect of the field. I want to help my listeners understand, you know, what makes a quality product. There's a lot of media does a really good job of scaring people away from using herbs, but there are a lot of wonderful, safe, effective preparations out there. So I want you to help educate my listeners about how to select a good product and reassure them that a lot of herbal products on the market, if prepared properly, are very, very safe and effective for use for a lot of their health concerns and conditions. So stick with us. When we come back on the other side of this break, we're going to be picking up our conversation with Rick Scalzo, CEO of Gaia Herbs. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living. Don't go anywhere. We will be back in just a minute. Good morning and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, located here in Bethesda, Maryland on West Cedar Lane. I am your host for this hour, Dr. Kevin Passero. My wonderful co-host Dana Lake will return next week. We are here today talking about herbs and herbal medicine. I have on the phone with me as my special guest, Rick Scalzo, the CEO and president of Gaia Herbs, with over 25 years of clinical and practical experience with herbal medicine, sharing with us his insights and information about the use of herbs as medicine. Just want to remind everyone that the Village Green is in the middle of their big summer sale, 20 to 30% of off of all products on the store until July 15th. So if you are a regular shopper at Village Green and you need to refill some things, even if you're not running out, now's a great time to get in there and get your refills done and take advantage of the great savings that are available. If you're not a shopper, I just got to tell you, the Village Green is a wonderful place to go. They've been serving the Bethesda community for over 40 years, offering people individualized solutions to their health and wellness needs. We have a regular traditional pharmacy where you can get your regular prescriptions filled. We have a wonderful compounding pharmacy that does custom compounding of nutritional supplements in addition to other compounding needs like bioidentical hormones. And of course, we have all of our natural products, over 10,000 different products, and a very talented and educated array of staff members who have been working in the health and nutrition field for over 10, 15 years at least. I have myself, a naturopathic doctor. We have a clinical herbalist, nutritionist. So if you're just looking to get some answers or have some questions about your health and wellness needs, feel free to stop in. Talking with most of us is free of charge, and you don't need an appointment unless you're coming to see me. But please feel free to stop in. We have a really wonderful resource of people to speak with. So I really want to get back to our show today. Before we hit the break, we were talking about some just the wonderful aspect of herbs and their unique ability to interface with our bodies. The fact that humans have been co-evolving with herbs for thousands and thousands of years, and our bodies have evolved very elaborate mechanisms to interface with herbs. So I think what we want to cover in this segment is some of the aspects about herb safety. So, I mean, Rick, this is a huge issue. I mean, being in the industry, you obviously know that a lot of times the media paints really poor picture of what it's like to use herbal supplements. So what are some of your comments on that? And maybe talk to us a little bit about, you know, how people find a safe product or what it means to produce a safe, effective herbal product.
Well, the concept that nothing exists in nature in isolation is important to understand when it comes to herbal safety, because when we look at plant chemistries, we perhaps eliminate the risk of side effects or toxic effects because of the synergy in the chemistries of the plant. And I think it's important to understand that wholeness. And when you take an herbal medicine, you are consuming all of that great wisdom of nature in its perfectly arranged structure, so that's perfectly designed for the body. Now, when we talk about herbal safety, there are a lot of regulatory statuses that have been set up for producing herbal medicines. And years and years ago, there was a law that was established called the Deshaies Law, the Dietary Supplement Health and Educational Act. I think it was back in 1994 where the federal government passed a law that permitted certain claims to be made about herbal medicine. And within the scope of that law was the provisions for good manufacturing practices. The good manufacturing practices part of that law just is getting implemented now, what, 15 years later.
Wow.
And the GMPs, as we call them, provide for a means to establish identity validation of the material, of the herb that goes into the product. It establishes the means to prove purity, safety, and efficacy of herbal products. And all manufacturers have to comply with these standards now, and these standards have to prove that what you say is in the bottle is indeed in the bottle through some sort of identity validation. You have to prove that the product is free of contamination, free of adulteration, that it doesn't have that it wasn't spiked with any kind of artificial ingredients. And
right, which that has come up. There's been some controversy about some herbal products, particularly coming from other countries that actually contain trace amounts of pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, that is true. That is very, very true. Products typically from China. And I think we have to pay attention to, as consumers of herbal products, how to choose these products, how to really differentiate between what is a GMP-certified or a GMP-qualified product versus something that is just made in the kitchen, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are guidelines that the store personnel can offer. But here at Gaia Herbs, we are a GMP-compliant facility, and we go through all the stages of identity validation, microbial testing, analytical testing, heavy metal testing, pesticide testing, all the things that we want to know to determine is the product pure, safe, and efficacious.
Right, so using all these things, I actually have this right off your website, column chromatography, gas chromatography, mass spectrometry, high-performance liquid chromatography. These are all things that you guys do to particularly identify the content of the herb, because, you know, there's a lot of times what happens, or from my understanding, Rick, is that somebody can have a product that has an herb in it. Now, what they put in it was a different species than the medicinal herb. So, yeah, it contains that herb, but it's the wrong species. Not even have the medicinal properties, or it doesn't have the identity of what people think it is. So using these different kinds of spectrometry tools is one way that you guys can look and identify the correct plant, correct?
Yeah, this is particularly true for one plant that is so commonly used, Echinacea. And it's not happening any longer, but years ago, the industry was using a species of Echinacea known as Echinacea pallida, thinking it was Echinacea angustifolia. The chemistries of these plants are very, very different, and one is much more expensive. And most of the Echinacea angustifolia that was being sold was truly Echinacea pallida. This was about 6 or 7 years ago in our industry, and it could be why people weren't getting the results that they should have gotten with Echinacea.
Right.
The problem's now been resolved, and we were part of fixing that problem through a federally funded grant by the NIH, NCCAM division of NIH.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's great. So that's one part of it. So now that GMP standards are being implemented, there is a higher level of accountability for companies that are producing herbal products. Is that a correct statement to say?
There is. And presumably, companies are now adopting the GMPs into their practices.
Right.
And hopefully this will, you know, clean up the product mix in the industry and help to really ensure that really quality products of a higher standard are there in the, you know, on the shelves in the industry.
Okay. So now what I like to also talk about is, you know, that level of quality that you get when you have a company, and there are lots of companies out there like that, but like Gaia, that is sort of vertically integrated, which means that they control the process from mostly pretty much the seed all the way to the finished product. So you guys, there's not a lot of concern about where the product is coming from, meaning that you're not shipping over large masses of herbal mass from China, from India, from other countries. You guys are growing it on your farm and actually controlling the process of growth, packaging, processing, and sales the whole way through.
We do. We are a vertically integrated seed-to-shelf company. And we've learned over the years the importance of growing quality herbs. You know, your herbal product, your herbal medicine that you consume can only be as good as the herb from which it was made.
Right.
And so it really starts with growing quality plant material. And I always say let nature do the standardization in terms of, you know, growing this herb out in quality soils that are appropriate for the plant, and then observing the growth characteristics and harvesting the plant at the right time, so you know when the chemistries have reached their peak performance, and then capture those chemistries in the right extraction, right concentration processes, and validate them through the proper testing methods. And
yep.
That's what we do here, and that's our process of what we call whole plant standardization.
And the other thing, you know, that is important to me is the safety aspect. I mean, you know that, so there are several different things. People are having to implement these GMP standards to rule out some of the worst types of, you know, atrocities, I guess, that can be done with herbal medicine, if you want to use such a strong word. But when you have a company that certifies the herb as organic or grown organically, you know you're getting a little bit level of safety because that herb hasn't been grown with heavy amounts of pesticides, herbicides, so you're not going to get any of these toxic residues on plants. Other companies may be able to pass GMP standards with an herb that is not organically grown.
That's right. And,
yeah.
You know, when we talk about organically grown, the USDA governs this program now of organic cultivation, and it's a third-party certification process. So typically a USDA certifier will come in and inspect the farm and operation to ensure that the farming practices, from the fertility program to the pest management program to the crop rotation program and even the farm equipment maintenance program and where the seeds are sourced from,
mm-hmm.
and so forth, all of that's managed under the organic certification programs.
That's great. Now, there's this other thing called wild harvesting, which I want to talk about a little bit, because I know if somebody were to pick up one of your products, there is sometimes some wild harvested stuff in there. You know, there are different ways to do wild harvesting. Basically, that means you're going out in nature in the natural habitat of the plant and collecting it from there, not on a farm. And I think what people need to understand is there's different approaches to it. There's your approach, which I'd like you to explain in a minute. And then there are some other people that may be doing wildcrafting, but where are they getting the plants from? Are they getting it from the side of a highway? Are they getting it in the backyard of a nuclear power plant? You know, I mean, where are they getting these herbs from? And what is the likelihood, even though it's in the wild, you know, what does it contain and what has it been exposed to?
Yeah, wild harvest is a wide open term. Our practice of employing wild crafters, as we call them, is to ensure that they're either botanists or herbalists or somehow people that are very sensitive to the land and are real stewards of the land. In fact, if they're harvesting in forest lands, they need to ensure that they're getting stewardship of the crop that they're harvesting. But essentially, when a person is going out wild crafting, they need to authenticate that the product has been crafted in an area that's free of any toxins, that they're not over-harvesting, that if they're harvesting certain parts of the plant, they need to ensure that the vital parts that remain behind are in the soil,
mm-hmm.
so they can propagate the plant for future years. We have a document of authenticity. I don't know, it must be 20, 30 questions long that our wildcrafters must comply with in order to satisfy us to buy these wildcrafted herbs from them. Certain herbs you can't grow organically. They,
mm-hmm.
they simply don't perform well under cultivation. So you need to get them in their natural wild habitat. And that's why we use wildcrafted herbs.
Yep.
But they have to go through the same rigorous standard as organic cultivated herbs do.
That's great. All right, so we are due for another break right now. The time just absolutely flies. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about some of the different forms of herbal extracts and what you might want to consider when thinking about what type of product you're going to buy. So this is Dr. Kevin Passera with the Essentials of Healthy Living, AM 1260, brought to you by The Village Green. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this break. Good morning and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, Maryland. Don't forget, we're here every Saturday and Sunday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. bringing you a wide variety of topics related to health, wellness, and nutrition. I'm Dr. Kevin Passera, your host for this hour. My wonderful co-host Dana Lake will return next week with another exciting show, so don't forget to tune in. Also, remember, you can download any of our previous shows for free by going to www.myvillagegreen.com, and you can download any of the archive shows that we have. We have over a year and a half worth of shows, wonderful topics. Feel free to peruse the topics and download anything you'd like for free. And also, don't forget, at the Village Green Apothecary, we are in the middle of our summer sale that runs until July 15th. So if you need refills or to pick up any other products, now's a great time to stop in and save a bunch of money. So today we're talking about herbal medicine, and I have Rick Scalzo on the phone with me, who is the president and CEO of Gaia Herbs. He has over 25 years of clinical and practical experience with herbal medicines. In the last segment, we were talking about some of the new standards that have been put into place to help ensure that the herbal products you are getting are safe and effective. And we were talking about some of the benefits that some companies like Gaia Herbs uses, where they make sure to use all organic herbs, or when they can't get organic, ethically wildcrafted herbs. And we were talking a little bit about some of those topics. In this segment, what I'd like to cover is some of the disadvantages and advantages of using different forms of herbal extracts. So there's no other better expert that I could have on the phone than Rick, who can talk to us a little bit about some of these different forms. So, Rick, let's talk about some of the different forms of herbal extracts. We have things like capsules, which can be dried powder herbs, freeze-dried herbs, liquid extracts. And for all of you listening, there's a little bit of noise in the background. The emergency broadcast system is running a little bit of test in our studio, so please just bear with me while this runs through. And there's liquid extracts. And Rick, I'm reading right off your website. Liquid extract is a process by which constituents within a plant are separated from the inert or fibrous material with the use of a menstruum. The process of extraction serves to increase concentration of desired constituents as the consumable product contains only pharmacologically active constituents that are more stable, concentrated, and represent greater uniformity per dose. So let's talk about some of these different forms and what some of your favorites are.
Well, obviously, when you talk about an herbal extract, you're talking about just what you described, a way to separate the chemistries of the plant from the inert fibers. And there are many ways to present an herbal extract in a capsule form, in a tablet form, in a dry form, in a liquid form. And one of the things that is important is to identify what is the best form for the herb that I'm taking. Some herbs are really very, very stable in alcohol, for example, like Echinacea angustifolia. You really need to extract that plant in a higher amount of grain alcohol in order to extract out the proper chemistries that are pharmacologically active. Other plants like nettles, many people take nettles because it's such a nutrition-rich plant, might be better to take in a capsule form, in a dry form, because you're consuming more of the nutrition and more of those nutrients that are not soluble in alcohol. They're more soluble in water. So if you take them in dry form, you just drink it down with as a tea or in a capsule with water. So really, the best way to take an herb in terms of an extract is what's best for that particular herb in terms of the chemistries that it has. And I think as herbalists, we know what herb extracts best and what type of solvent, and we know what delivery system is best suited for that particular herb. And I particularly like to use the liquid delivery system because I think you can enhance bioavailability, absorption, and you can increase the efficacy time of the when you consume the plant.
Right. So I think this is an important one to spend a minute on, because I agree with you 100%. Liquid extracts, unless it's a situation like you pointed out with nettles where it's not as conducive to an alcohol extract or a tincture extract, I think are really one of the most effective ways to dose herbs. But a lot of people don't like to use or have some stigmas against using the liquid extracts because of the taste and the alcohol content. So I just want to spend a couple minutes explaining or educating people as to, you know, why in a lot of situations these types of liquid extracts can be more effective than using a dry powdered herb.
Well, they're more effective because they're more concentrated, and in a liquid state, they get absorbed better, they get absorbed quicker, and they kind of bypass the whole digestive process and get absorbed within a few minutes through the mucosal membranes. And I think that's a value for most of the herbs that we're consuming. Also, in an extract state, the herbs are stabilized. They don't degrade as they do in a dried state.
Right. And then, I mean, if you think about in a dry capsule state or in a dry state, your body has to, you know, break down all of those cellulose bonds and has to really do a lot of digestion and breakdown process to get to those medicinal properties versus in an alcohol extracted or liquid state, you know, the alcohol or the menstruum, whatever you're soaking the herb in, has done that job of breaking down a lot of those cell wall issues to liberate the medicinal properties.
Yeah, there's no question that liquid absorption is superior. And then if someone's digestion is compromised, you know, they're best suited for liquid absorption anyway. And I think the whole liquid PhytoCap technology really gets around the problem of consumer compliance.
Mm-hmm.
You get all the advantage of consuming a capsule in a liquid form and without the disadvantages of having to taste the herb.
Now, this is a specific proprietary technology that Gaia has, correct?
Yeah, it's a technology that we developed years ago to take a liquid extract, remove the alcohol and water, keep the herb in a liquid state, and put it into a vegetarian capsule. Mm. So it remains in a liquid state, yet has all the advantages of a capsule.
So you get that same concentration, but obviously, just like you're saying, you spare the palatability issue.
Yeah, you get the same concentration, the same absorption, the same assimilation as you would with a liquid, and yet, you know, in
a
capsule.
I think that's something that's important to bring up, because if somebody walks into the store and picks up a Gaia product off the shelf, and I'm trying to think of one, maybe a turmeric one or an echinacea one or a saw palmetto one that's a liquid PhytoCap, and they compare it to a dry herb capsule, they may be a little bit misled or misinformed in that the milligram dosages on the liquid PhytoCap are going to be less, correct? But it's more concentrated because it's a liquid extract.
Yeah, it appears less because
right.
It's in an extracted state. So you're measuring an extract versus just a dry herb.
Exactly.
And the extract is typically a multiple of times much more concentrated than the dry herb.
Right. So it's not always about just reading the milligrams when you're learning about a specific technology like that. It's important to understand everything that's going into the product. So I just think that's an important thing, because some people have asked me about that, various times when I recommend Gaia products specifically. So I want to talk a little bit about this issue of standardization, because there was a lot of emphasis placed on standardization a while back, and now there's maybe a little bit of backlash. Some of the definitions as to what does standardized mean is getting looser and looser as time goes on. I want you to just spend a couple minutes talking about the disadvantages, advantages of standardization, and then maybe talking about this process that you guys have of whole plant standardization and what that means.
Well, there are many ways to standardize herbal products. One of the ways to standardize herbal products is to create a isolated, purified product, and that means that you go through the extraction steps like ginkgo is a classic one. Most of the ginkgo in the marketplace that's standardized today goes through an 18 or 19-step process using different solvents and different purifiers, only to separate out what is thought to be active and remove all of the other synergistic compounds, actually making it into a phytopharmaceutical. So this is a form of standardization that is called purification and isolation.
It's very Western-minded. It very much goes along that lines of, you know, find what the active constituent might be, pull it out, concentrate it as much as possible. But, you know, as you're going to tell us, we know herbs have a little bit more to offer than that.
Yeah, it's verging on the pharmaceutical model. Then there's the process of reconstitution, where you have an herb that's extracted, put into a powder, and then measured specifically into precise amounts back into a liquid or into a capsule, into a dry form. And if it's going into a liquid, it's reconstituted. And this is another method of standardization. And then you have the method of standardization that I refer to it as the spiking method, where you actually take a pharmaceutical agent like ephedrine, which is a purified synthetic agent, and spike an herbal extract of ephedra to get the particular levels of activity that you're looking for. And that's a very dangerous thing to do, because you're using synthetic agents to enable a product to achieve a certain desired concentration.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all ways that the industry has used in the past to standardize herbal products. Our process is a whole plant standardization, which I kind of alluded to before, where you grow the plant, you harvest it at a particular time where it's reached its peak therapeutic value, you extract it with the right solvent, you concentrate it to a desired level, and when you concentrate it, you concentrate the whole plant, not just one constituent in it, and then you measure what you think to be active or know to be active and validate the product on that basis.
Right.
That's true whole plant standardization, and it actually embodies the true chemical blueprint or the profile of the plant as it occurred while the plant was growing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can run into a lot of pitfalls with the individual nutrient standardization because, you know, we think we know what the active constituent is, but these plants have thousands of different phytonutrients. And something like, you know, I think with St. John's wort, you know, it was always concentrated or standardized to hypericin, but what we're learning is that there might be some other constituents that are more effective. And, you know, but everybody's always concentrated it for specifically hypericin. So, you know, as the research evolves and a lot of it's early on these plants, we may find out different things. So getting the whole spectrum of the plant, I think, is really important. So unfortunately, we got to take another quick break. When we come back, Rick is going to give us his wonderful insight about some of the top herbs that you might want to consider taking for optimal health. So don't go anywhere. This is the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, brought to you by The Village Green. We will be back in just a minute. And welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. Good morning to everyone. We are here every Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. Today we've been having a very exciting show talking about herbal products and herbalism in general. I have on the phone with me a wonderful special guest, Rick Scalzo, who's the CEO and president of Gaia Herbs. He has over 25 years of clinical and practical experience working with herbs and herbal medicine. We've been talking about the importance of herbs and their development with humans over the years of evolution and how our bodies are specifically evolved to respond to the phytonutrients and phytochemicals in herbs. We talked about some of the standardization processes related to herbs and the disadvantages and advantages to that. We talked about different forms of taking herbs, tinctures versus capsules versus teas. And we talked about some of the new laws that have been put into place to ensure that as consumers, you have a higher quality and standard of herbs that are brought to you on the market. If you are just tuning into the show and want to hear about all those wonderful things that we've talked about, feel free to go to www.myvillagegreen.com and download any of our archive shows for absolutely free. So we don't have too much longer in this last segment, but I wanted to tap Rick's wonderful knowledge a little bit more and talk about some of the top herbs you might consider taking on a daily basis to ensure optimal health.
Well, Kevin, I think I'd like to start this segment by saying that there are four categories, therapeutic categories, that I think as individuals we ought to look at to sustain wellness, and they are the fiber category, the antioxidant category, the anti-inflammatory category, and the omega-3 category. And I think if we can have a daily practice of consuming herbal plant-based agents that fit into these categories, we would do wonders for our health and longevity. So I'm going to start by Dr. Oz has been talking a lot on the Oprah show about chia seed lately, and there's some amazing health attributes about chia fiber and the nutrition and the omega-3s in chia seed.
So we're not talking about chia pets, or is that what you grow on a chia pet?
Yeah, that's what chia pets are grown from chia seed. But there's an amazing amount. You've had many shows about omega-3s, and
yes.
Chia seed has lots of omega-3s in it, but it also has a tremendous amount of fiber. It's very, very high in protein, and when you look at the amount of calcium, magnesium, and other minerals in chia seed, you have to wonder, where was this food? You know, mm-hmm. Why are we just learning about it in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think I learned recently about how much calcium content was in a serving of the chia product that you guys have. And, you know, without spiking it with any additional calcium, it's a huge amount. And calcium is a tough mineral to get into a lot of plants.
And it's in a form that it's in a most highly evolved form of calcium, so it's very easy to absorb. The point is about chia, you can get your daily fiber needs, you can get your a lot of your protein needs, you can get a lot of your omega-3 needs, and a lot of your mineral and vitamin needs just right by taking chia fiber. So I think that's one of the things that I would like to suggest as part of a wellness program.
So that's something that maybe you would incorporate into a morning smoothie or mix it with some juice or something like that on a daily basis?
My favorite thing is to take the chia fresca drink every morning by taking chia seed and mixing it in water, about a half a glass of water, and letting it swell up, which it does because it's so mucilaginous.
Right.
And then adding some pomegranate juice to
it.
Pomegranate has tremendous health benefits and
yep.
cardiovascular wellness benefits. And then stirring it up and drinking that chia fresca drink down as a way to get this nutrition into your body.
Sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's chia. The next antioxidant that I would consume on a daily basis is my favorite, and that is turmeric root.
I am right with you. Probably one of my favorite herbs. I don't know if there's any other herb that has more research behind it than turmeric. It is unbelievable. The amount of health benefits that this herb seems to offer humans. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's hugely antioxidant, and it's very, very strongly anti-inflammatory. When I looked at the anti-inflammatory attributes of turmeric, I found that every pathway of inflammation is addressed and mitigated by turmeric. It's just one of the superheroes in our plant kingdom, and I think that if we consume a couple of capsules of turmeric root every day, we would be contributing tremendously to the reduction of inflammation, to protect our bodies from oxidative stress, to protect the heart from oxidative damage due to free radicals, and really to address a lot of the chronic illnesses that evolve through the process of inflammation and oxidative damage.
Now, how do you get around the absorption issue of turmeric? Because traditionally, it's not all that well absorbed in the body.
Well, what we do here at Gaia is we extract turmeric through two mechanisms. We extract it through a supercritical mechanism and through a water ethanol mechanism. Mm-hmm. And those extracts are then concentrated in a liquid state, and that assists in the absorption of it. And we measure the amount of curcumin. Curcumin typically isn't absorbed very, very well,
right.
But in a liquid form, it tends to be absorbed better.
Better, and, okay. Because most of the products out there are just dry powdered herb.
Yeah,
which can be difficult to absorb.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what next? I know you got a few other, you got at least one other home run hitter on that list of yours.
Well, you know, there's a lot. We have to address stress in our life, and
yep.
I think today with all the world problems, the economy, the environment, and so forth, and the recession, you know, a lot of people are really stressed out,
yep.
And I think it really taxes our adrenal tissues
mm-hmm.
and the adrenal system. So I think there are herbs, and we've created this formula, which we happen to call adrenal health, but it's got some of the most amazing herbs to address performance, energy, vitality, longevity.
Yeah, and just to help your body be a little bit more resilient to stress.
Totally resilient
yep.
to stress. The herbs in it are rhodiola, which I think is one of the great adaptogenic herbs. Actually, they're all adaptogens in it, but rhodiola and ashwagandha
mm-hmm.
and schizandra and another wonderful adaptogen known as holy basil and wild oats. These are herbs that have been long used to help our body adapt to stress in a more effective way and to improve the vitality and the energy of all of our systems that drive our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an important formula that I would consume every day.
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of people doing adrenal supportive therapies on a regular basis because of the amount of stress that people are under.
And then finally, the consumption of omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it be in fish oil form or flaxseed form or the new form that Gaia is making from chia seed, because chia is one of the best plant-derived sources of omega-3s, to consume some omega-3s every day as a part of addressing inflammation as well. So that's kind of the package for hitting a home run for wellness and longevity, and I really believe in it. There is one other emerging. I'm really following this very, very carefully, and it's a substance that you probably have heard of. Dr. Oz on Oprah talks about it a lot. It's called resveratrol, which is the it's a flavonoid found in the skins of muscadine grapes and red grapes, but it's also found in a plant called Japanese knotweed. And they're showing that resveratrol has amazing attributes to turn on the longevity gene and help to promote wellness, and it has a long list of attributes associated with it.
Yeah, there's some very exciting news about resveratrol coming out. So, Rick, thank you so much for that insight. We're going to have to wrap it up today. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening to another Essentials of Healthy Living. If you just missed the show or you're just tuning in, download it for free on the Village Green website, myvillagegreen.com. And don't forget to tune in next week for Dana Lake. And this has been Dr. Kevin Passero, and I will see you in a couple of weeks.